Welcome to the Acupuncturist on Fire podcast. This is your host, AJ Adamczyk. Today on this episode that you're about to listen to, I sat down with Dan Dominguez, an acupuncturist from upstate New York in the Rochester area, and he works for the University of Rochester's Medical Center, and he developed an acupuncture program within their orthopedic department. Totally such a great situation for him. He works alongside physical therapists and other doctors just like myself, and he works on pretty much all sports medicine stuff, which is right up his alley. Dan is one of the leaders in this category. He has an undergrad in exercise physiology and is a huge strength and conditioning specialist. His knowledge in this department is huge. And me and him sat down and had an awesome conversation about assessing and treating running injuries. You know, now that the weather's warming up, people are getting out there running. Obviously, you know, in this Northeast area where we are, and I'm sure a lot of you guys out there are in similar areas that, you know, this is marathon season, triathlon season. People are getting out there. They're going to start injuring themselves. And these are common injuries. I mean, we do treat a lot of athletes, me and Dan, but and then we do treat, you know, the weekend warrior or the day-to-day person that just goes walking. There's still the exact same injury. And a plantar fasciitis is still plantar fasciitis. You know, a calf strain is still calf strain, or runner's knee is still runner's knee, no matter if it's an elite runner or, you know, your 60-year-old grandmother. You know, I hope you really enjoy this episode. It was a great conversation to have with Dan, and I look forward to keep giving you guys some great content like this. If you do like this, please share it with your friends and other acupuncturists out there. And if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me, and I look forward to interacting with all you guys online.
This is the Acupuncturist on Fire podcast, the only acupuncture podcast where you will hear from business insiders, fellow acupuncturists, and be inspired to be the best acupuncturist you can be. Now, here's your host, AJ Adamczyk.
All right, Dan, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so you know, a while back, I saw you wrote a little advertisement. I think that's what it kind of was about, you know, the spring season is coming, warm weather's coming, and runners, people are starting to run, and you kind of started going through a list of running injuries and, you know, just speaking about it. And if anyone has any of these, come into the office. And I was like, that's such an awesome little thing you wrote. And it really sparked my mind of, you know, having you come on and speak to us about, you know, all these running injuries and everything. And myself being a triathlete and runner, you know, I'm very, very conscious of these injuries, and obviously I see them a lot in my office, and I figured, you know, you come on and just, we can just bounce ideas off each other and, you know, share what we do for these injuries with, you know, the rest of the community.
That's, yeah. And that was exactly my idea with doing that is, this is the time right around now where people get back into running. The weather changes and you're getting out and you're not on the treadmill anymore, and you're getting out and running on different planes, and these injuries start to trickle into the clinic. And, you know, so just put it out there into the world that, you know, letting people know, okay, this is the time that I start seeing this stuff, and have them, you know, just really educating them on the different injuries there are, and that acupuncture can be effective for it. You don't have to run through knee pain or hamstring tightness. You can get it treated pretty quickly and get back to doing what you love pretty fast.
I think you could agree with me that, you know, I think you might have put this in this, or I think we've talked about this in the past, that, you know, one of the biggest things that can lead to most of these is typically either glute deactivation or glute weakness.
Yes.
You know, so let's start right there. Let's start from the top, you know, the hip, glute, and work our way all the way down. And, you know, how would you address, like, you know, a deactivated or a weak glute? You know, are you giving people exercise? Are you doing motor points there? What are you type of thing are you doing? Because I know that's a huge thing I see, and you know, I address that probably similar to you. I want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, first visit when they come in, depending on the injury, well, that's probably one of the first places I look is the glute. I feel that it's so important in the lower body chain, keeping the glutes, keeping the hips from getting too tight, and the glutes from becoming too weak. Because so many people sit all day. So you're just sitting on the glutes, deactivating them, putting them to sleep, essentially, right? Stuart McGill talks about that with his gluteal amnesia. And so many runners, because that forward plane of movement, they don't really activate the glutes when they run. And then they go and they, you know, they sit at a desk all day, and it's just like putting those glutes to sleep. So then you start getting these different injuries like IT band syndrome and runner's knee, all this stuff, kind of even plantar fasciitis coming from the glute. So what I'll do is usually assess, test for strength in the lower pelvic chain. If they test weak at the glutes or the glute max, glute med, I'm needling those with motor points and hooking them up to stem for about 5 minutes. If it's chronic, I'll usually hook them up to the Pantheon. If I feel it's more acute or on the first visit, I may just do the Pointer Excel and stem that for 30 seconds to a minute, and then retest, take that needle out.
What hertz are you using on this?
Usually 2 to 4 hertz.
Pantheon and on the Excel?
Same, yeah, and I'll play with, if I put it on the Pantheon, I'll play with discontinuous just to keep the signal strong to the brain. So having that impulse come on and off so that your body doesn't acclimate to it like it does sometimes on continuous.
Very true, very true. Awesome. So, you know, let's go right down and go right to that knee of, because obviously we addressed that through, we're talking about like reasons why we get these injuries and because of deactivated hip and everything like that. But once we clear that up, you know, obviously that is a thing we want to clear up before we even address, say, you know, runner's knee. How are you assessing runner's knee in the first place? How are you distinguishing runner's knee from, you know, a knee arthritis in a person, something like that?
Well, I think age has a lot to do with it. And usually with runner's knee, I'm thinking irritation under the cartilage, right, in the patella. So the way that arthritis responds or the way that it comes on versus runner's knee is very different. I like to look at pronation. People that inwardly pronate tend to, or their ankles just tend to roll in. They tend to be more, susceptible to that kind of injury. So looking right at the ankles, looking right at how their foot rolls in can kind of point me right in that direction as to why they have that. Glute weakness is another big reason. And so when I'm thinking of treatment, usually I'm going, starting at the glutes, reactivating that. If that's not taking care of it, I look right at the quads as well.
So Dan, are you doing like a walking screen or a running screen on these people at all?
Occasionally I will do walking screens with them where I have them walk down the hallway so I can kind of assess that. But we do, in my clinic, we do have, treadmills. So I will put people on a treadmill from time to time to assess their gait when they're running, and just take a look at how they strike, how things are looking in their gait based on my background's in exercise physiology. So I have some skills in that set that make it a little easier for me to assess gait.
For sure. Yeah. I'm right there with you with exercise phys, bud. Yeah, so, I mean, that being said, I mean, once you do distinguish, all right, you know, this is a knee here that, you know, this person's just came, you know, just started hitting the roads, you know, because they're training for a marathon or a half marathon, and all of a sudden they went from running, you know, 1 to 2 miles a week, all of a sudden now they're putting in 10, 15, 20 miles a week, and all of a sudden they're come limping into your office and their knee is just blown up. You know, what kind of treatment are you doing on this? Are you doing motor points of the quad?
Yeah, so usually what I'll do is go through the vastus medialis, rec fem, and vastus lateralis when I'm treating that. And the way that I stem it is typically I'll go from inside to outside, just in the way that the quad would fire during their run. It kind of fires through a sequence. So I'll stem, I'll put in motor points for all three, and then I'll stem the VMO to the rec fem to the vastus lateralis in that order, because that's the natural order of the way that the quad will fire when you're running. And so I like to do that. I'll usually put in points into the eyes of the knee. That's the typical TCM approach to knee pain.
Would you stim that too?
I don't stim those, but I've known people that do. I usually will stim the motor points, and then I'll put in local needles there. And I like to, you know, I'll put a TDP lamp over top of that, and then after treatment I'll use gua sha over the patellar tendon to break up tightness in the patella there. are you just doing, to get things moving along.
Are you doing any distal work, like a liver 3, a liver 4 type point to, our GB34, TCM approach or what's first, that nerve that's there? Like, where is your approach on those type of things?
Yeah, so I think for me it depends on where the pain is at. If they have lateral knee pain, then I'm doing GB34, GB31 to get right into the IT band as well. On occasion, I'll do opposite elbow. So I'll kind of pepper the opposite elbow for the knee. But distally, liver 3 is a good point to use for that. I don't do it all the time. I'm TCM trained, but I'm getting further and further away from the TCM mindset when it comes to injuries with how I treat. It's much more orthopedic based and where the pain is and what muscles are causing that for the person. And then I also like to do rehab exercises as well. So if someone comes in with runner's knee, we're doing glute activation exercises like bridging. We're going to be doing side steps with bands. And we have bands in our clinic, so I'll give them bands to take home and give them a couple things and have them start to stretch their hip flexors again.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, just to give a little input on my own, that GB34 obviously, is a huge meeting site where the, peroneal nerve and tibial, the sciatic nerve is coming down and is splitting and coming out, and it's a huge nerve ending. And obviously, I did a dissection recently, and the nerve output in this area is unreal for just the whole leg chain of nerves. And then also, too, liver 3 is, the distal neurocentral reflex site for that distal part of that nerve to keep that nerve pathway going. These are right here, if you could see, it's see the foot there? You could see number, 23? Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Dan. So like that's these are from Alex, posters from Alex I ordered, and so they're these huge, just so totally not TCM, has nothing to do with TCM. Obviously the beliefs behind it are just pure nerves. So these are just my inputs of why I do liver 3. I don't do liver 3 because of TCM at all. But I also, in the back of my mind, I do still always have that, because liver is involved with tendon, and why are we hitting the patellar tendon? So I kind of, I cross those two things in my head, and I kind of use it. I'm like, well, I kind of marry the two. I'm hitting nerve, but I'm also at the same time, I'm addressing the liver. So liver controls tendon. So I'm addressing that at the same time. So I kind of love adding these things into my treatments, not just local, So, let's move right down to, actually, let's go around the leg, because I know you want to address hamstring tightness. This is one of the things that I feel come in a lot for me, and I kind of, my motor point location and my addressing this is, I think, is a little bit weak, and I think I could get a lot from you answering this stuff, so I'm excited for this one. So let's go over that.
Yeah, hamstring tightness is a big one. I see that a lot, people starting that process up of running. A lot of these things come on from not so much overtraining, but just getting out there and going from 2 miles to 10 miles overnight. And so motor point wise, you've got biceps femoris, semitendinosus, semimembranosus. So I think it's important to know where the pain is in the hamstring, if it's lateral right down the center or more medial, cause that points you in different directions. But I like to, with the hamstrings, I usually like to treat the quads as well. So the antagonist-protagonist relationship between the hamstrings and the quads. Oftentimes, people are overdeveloped in the quads and underdeveloped in the hamstrings. And so they tend to get some really strong quads and then weak, underdeveloped hamstrings, and that results in tightness quite often, and you're prone to it if you have tight hamstrings or you're too flexible. Because patients that I've had patients come in, they just touch their toes, but they have hamstring pain. And so I think for them, it's just that overstretch of the muscle, and then kind of breaking down, like, what's your pre-run warm-up? What are you doing before you go out and run? Are you doing a static stretch? Are you doing any kind of a warm up? Or are you just getting out and hitting the road? And are you training on a track or on an incline? You know, and making sure, because I think that was early on, I wouldn't ask those questions, and I would treat the hamstring, and it would feel better. And they were like, yeah, I went for an 8 mile run, and then we kind of break down what terrain are you running on, and then you figure out quickly. Oh, well, you know, I've always run the same route. I never, you know, so then I had that patient that I was thinking of in my head go backwards. Instead of heading right out of their driveway, I had them head left. And it changed the dynamic completely. And that was what cleared their pain. It was just there was an angle in which they ran on all the time. And that just tightened up that right hamstring on that person. And, you know, so I'm usually hooking them up to a Pantheon. And running stem on there for about 10-15 minutes. I like to use heat on the hamstrings as well.
How about gua sha on the hamstrings?
Gua sha. I'm a big gua sha guy after treatment.
Or cupper?
I don't cup a ton, and it's mostly because
time.
I just don't. Yeah, time constraints. But what I'll do is usually I think of the hamstrings as getting a lot of fascial adhesions in them. So, what I'll do is needle the motor points, treat those with E-stem, and then after I take out, we'll hit both hamstrings with gua sha.
Awesome.
Just to break up adhesions through there.
Very cool, very cool. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I recently had a couple CrossFitters come in with hamstring issues, and I did pretty well with them, but they didn't clear up as quick as I'd like. But I definitely did well, and, you know, obviously they referred, you know, I got some referrals in from them, but... you know, it's definitely something that has me, I'm not like, oh, I could sit here and like just know exactly what's going on there. It's a little bit of a weakness in my toolbox is the hamstring.
Well, so you know, another thing I didn't mention there too is what the hamstrings will take over for the glutes when the glutes aren't firing. So you can get, oftentimes you'll have low back tightness and hamstring tightness as a result of under firing of the glutes. The hamstrings will do the job of the glutes quite often. So I always, that's not something I didn't mention before, but you always have to think of the glute max when and test that and see how it's firing, doing manual muscle testing, because I think that the glute max, glute med, oftentimes if you have hamstring pain, they're probably not firing well.
So what are you doing, like side lying extension with the, like I'm saying, like with their leg, you're side lying and then you're pushing down and stuff like that?
Yeah, so one of the tests that we do, and we're going to be going over this, and I'm having a seminar with Richard Hazel June 2nd, where we're going to do orthopedic testing as well as
where are you doing that?
That's going to be in Syracuse. It's going to be on a Friday. It's a 1 day intensive on our top 10 motor points and orthopedic tests to assess, to know which muscle you want to address.
Is there other seminars that weekend?
I believe there is a marketing seminar as well that weekend. So it's going to be
With Will?
With Will Sierra and Sharina Sparks.
Okay.
So we're just kind of sandwiching right onto that.
Very
And cool. Then we're going to have another full weekend seminar on motor points in third weekend in August, I believe.
Very cool, very cool. And that's in Syracuse too?
That's going to be in Syracuse, yeah.
Okay. All right, so you know, I'll throw that in the show notes and everything for you, so everyone has that. And if anyone has any questions, reach out to me or Dan. But let's just move right on. I mean, obviously the hamstring is definitely tricky, but you know, not everybody gets hamstring injuries. You know, one of the biggest things I see in my office, I have had some nice success with it, but obviously there is always those tricky ones, is the Achilles tendonitis. Or, you know, those type of things. And, you know, addressing that and distinguishing it from, you know, say, is there a partial tear there? Or, you know, what is the right way? Are we going directly at it? Are we actually hitting the tendon, or are we going near the tendon? You know, there's all these different directions, and I just want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, so Achilles tendonitis, Achilles tendinosis, I tend to get tendinosis into the clinic quite often.
Can you explain maybe the difference between the two for the listener?
So tendinosis is chronic. Once it passes that initial inflammation stage and it's a set in problem, they're going to have, they're usually, you can feel a little knot through there. that is more severe and takes a longer time. And people usually had that for 6, 7, 8 months. Tendinitis can last 2 to 6 months in runners, and it usually shuts them down. It's hard to run through that once that comes on. But you think of it, the Achilles attaches right at the soleus and the gastroc. So when someone comes in with Achilles tendinitis, first thing I'm doing is taking a look at their calves and seeing what kind of tightness they have in there. Looking for trigger points, absolutely doing the motor points of those areas. And then taking a look at heel strike, seeing what kind of dorsiflexion they're getting. Are they restricted there? Do we need to look at the tibialis anterior and get that firing as well? So that they're getting good ankle mobility, because they're already restricted through the Achilles. So we may need to give them a little help with dorsiflexion. So hitting the tibialis anterior is important too.
Totally. Dan, real quick, do you ever have these runners ever bring in their sneakers to actually look at the bottom of the sneaker to show where they're striking? Because a lot of, if you look at a runner's sneaker, the bottom of it, you can actually see where they're typically striking, because the wear on the sneaker is going to be in one area of the sneaker typically, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. They'll wear them out on the inside or on the outside. And you'll know, you know, just from that, how they're striking, if they're a pronator or a supinator. And then also I ask, what kind of shoes you're wearing when you're not running? And this is, you know, are you always in flat flip-flops in the summer, or are you wearing heels all the time for women? Because Achilles tendonitis and heels, they don't work well together. And it's the little things like that that I've kind of picked up over the years of making sure to ask the right question. Because you can give the perfect treatment, but if they go out and do all the wrong things, the pain's going to come back. And old habits die hard. And so figuring out, yeah, their Achilles is all screwed up from the calf. All right, we're going to hammer the calf. The calf is doing great. But they're back into those bad habits, like wearing...
If they're just shorting the calf the whole time by being in a
heel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an important thing. But usually Achilles tendonitis, if you catch it early, you can really make a big difference quickly for runners. But, you know, when I get new patients in, it's usually been a little while since they've had it. So it can take a little longer to fix.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I kind of think with Achilles tendonitis, 6 to 8 treatments is kind of my sweet spot there.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, I've had ones I can clear up in one, and I've had ones that, you know, like you said, that tendonitis was with that lump or that kind of that little adhesion there. You know, I've had ones that, like, almost to the point where, like, you know, you cleared it up enough that the person could run, but enough that they still are feeling it almost, you know, they're just not, it's just not cleared up 100%, you know, and it's frustrating, right? You know, when you're not clearing it up 100%.
Because, and that's what's cool about the style that you and I practice is those results, we're expecting it. And when we don't get it, it worries us, and it makes us think, like, what's really going on there? Is it something more severe if they're not getting better?
Is there a partial little tear in there that, you know what, hey, they got to lay off this. This might actually lead to a full tear and, you know, a year of rehab.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely something to address for sure. So, like, what are you doing for a treatment of this? You know, what is your go-to approach besides directly on? Obviously, you already said you address the calf. But are you addressing locally, like, type area? Are you coming in with needles from side to side? Are you, you know, are you actually pecking onto the tendon? What are you doing?
Mm-hmm. So I'll usually go right along the tendon, kidney channel and bladder channel. So really I'm feeling for where the tenderness is. Is it right at the insertion at the calcaneus, or is it a little higher up towards the calf? And I'll needle right into areas of pain. Usually I'll go kidney 7, kidney 3, UB62, 60, 59, right through there. And any specific point that I feel tenderness at, I'll needle right into. I don't typically go right into the Achilles, like upright tendon-wise, like Brad Wisnett talks about with back pain, he'll do that. I don't typically do that, but you know, that may be an option. What do you do?
So I
do you go right into it?
Yeah, I'm typically going to actually come, like, you know, say this is the tendon. I'm coming right up on the backside. I'm usually trying to kind of come as close as I can right to it on both sides. Yep. And I'm usually going to run stim right across. Mm-hmm. And of course, just like you said, I address the calf big time. I'm actually going to go all the way up into the, you know, the tibial plateau, like right behind hip UB40 and GB34, both of those, and stim those. Because I feel that addresses that negative impulse to the leg bottom down. We're shutting it off, the light switch at the bottom behind the
Absolutely.
Knee. So we're going to stim that for say 5, 10, 12 minutes, you know, in that range. This typical treatment is usually going to be around that 12 minute to 20 minute mark for me. Usually 12 minutes of actual treating, and then we're going to address it with some, you know, gua sha, you know, manual work, prior or after, or a little bit prior and a little bit prior after, just changing that environment, because sometimes what you don't realize it's going to be some fluid in there within that Achilles, because it's a lot of empty space in there, and that Achilles and that fluid in there alone can actually, hinder, from you actually healing enough, because if that fluid's in there, it could actually block those impulses and that change that you're trying to make. So sometimes actually before I'm actually going to come in there and actually just move with my thumb, just move the whole area, just lightly, like a slight little movement, proprioception of that skin, yep. and just moving right along the area with my thumb, just moving the blood up, the fluid up the body to actually change it. And then what I do is needle and then actually take that off, and then usually use like a piece of jade or the backside of, like, you know, a miso soup spoon.
Yep.
You know?
And another thing I like to do for Achilles tendonitis is I do kinesio taping on that.
Do you?
I
never got into it. You know, a PT that I work alongside, she's like kinesio taped, certified, and she's really into it. She's sweet at it. So I usually just, if I have an issue, I'll just have her do it. But I'd like to get more into that myself.
Sometimes you got to pick your poison. You can't really do gua sha and put oil on the skin and then put that tape on over top.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll say, okay, we're going to do this week and this next week. So
do you find it very, very effective?
I do. I'm a big fan of kinesio tape. So so I'll use that quite often for knee as well as ankle.
It's more holding your treatment type feel. Like, is that the concept behind your using?
Putting things in the right place and then retraining the body how to position. And so I think the kinesio tape aids in that, keeping the Achilles kind of compressed down just where you want it. And then rehab wise, eccentric heel drops are a big one for me. You can do that on a stair, have a patient do one-legged eccentric heel drops where they're coming up onto their toes and then slowly coming back down, lowering their heel past 90. I like that to strengthen the Achilles as well.
All right. Yeah, I mean, that definitely addresses it, you know, between the two of us of what people can do for that. You know, I feel like that's definitely a huge issue. Definitely you see a lot of that because of that weak glute that everyone has. You know, they're sitting in their car commuting or working, and you tend to, for some reason, it really hits there. And then obviously the last one, the plantar fascia, you know, it really, you know, you see this so much. And, you know, what is your go-to for plantar fascia?
So plantar fascia, I'm looking at how the big toe moves. I think that's a big part of plantar fasciitis is mobility of the big toe. Because usually that pain will result in a couple of different areas, sometimes right on the heel, but sometimes a lot of the times right on the instep through there. So we're looking at big toe movement. Usually people with plantar fasciitis have tight hip flexors. And so they're short striding and they're putting a lot of pressure in through that area. People who stand all day at their jobs, that's a common person to come in that's not a runner that'll have plantar fasciitis. And what a podiatrist will usually do is, okay, let's put you in, let's give you a cortisone shot in the foot and then put you in orthotics. And that's just really masking the problem. You got to figure out what's going on there, because you can have orthotics and still have plantar fasciitis. And if you take those out or they wear out, it's going to come back. So looking at posterior tibialis is a big one. The referral pattern for that is right through the medial instep. So taking care of that motor point. I'll usually look at right around kidney 2. There's one of my favorite motor points for plantar fasciitis. That will regain movement of the big toe, and then giving them exercises to gain flexibility back in the toes and get the proprioception there. Usually you want to work on core strength too. So I'll look at the obliques, to make sure that they're moving appropriately through the core when they're running as well.
So more the rotational sling you're talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I think what I've seen in the past is a lot of plantar fasciitis is not just in the foot. It's coming up from the hips, from the glutes, from the core. And usually you have some weakness there. So we'll address that as well.
Nice. There you go. So like, what is your, are you going directly right into that plantar and like just digging away at it? Or are you, you know, doing more gua sha local work, or are you doing, you know, e-stim? What are you doing? Motor points with stim?
I'm usually doing motor points. If someone comes in with plantar fasciitis, I don't typically needle the foot on the first treatment, the bottom of the foot. Around 3 or 4 is when I would do that if it's not clearing up, which most of the time, not most of the time, but a lot of the times we do get significant relief in the first 1 or 2 treatments by looking at posterior tibialis, looking at the calf, and then needling the glutes. And so I'll kind of work my way down.
And so, Dan, are you, when you do this working your way down type thing, are you doing like, all right, needles here, taking them out, needles there, taking them out, needles here, taking them out, needles here, then taking them out? Like, are you, is it, or is it all just one treatment?
I'll just put that in as one treatment. I have 2 rooms that I work out of. So, I'm taking a patient every half hour. So if I'm going to treat the posterior side, I just put them face down. We're going to do glutes, calf, right down into the foot. If I am doing that, retain needles for about 15, 20 minutes, do e-stim on that. Usually I use a pointer Excel if I'm working through quickly, or I'll hook them up to a Pantheon and then do gua sha at the end on the bottom of the foot for that.
Like after you let them sit, you'll go dress the other room and come back. And once they're set, you'll do the come back, take needles out, do gua sha there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely is a pretty good way of definitely addressing that for sure. I mean, I definitely like, I'm more of an aggressive needle. I go right into the foot. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty, especially that, you know, there's a nerve that runs directly across the plantar, that plantar nerve that, you know, you can kind of access it, you know, if you're at of like kidney 6 prime or 62 prime, you'd be 62 prime coming straight in on both sides. I almost match a needle in the middle. I'll usually drop like 1.5 to 2 inch needles on both sides. It's like the white and pink skin. And we'll come in right through the middle and we'll address that whole nerve to try to, you know, that negative impulse hitting that whole plantar, we're going to try to reset it. And then obviously all the stuff you said, kind of going up the chain, addressing each thing, always usually, you know, that UB40, GB34 area, stimming that to address the negative impulse from that area. And then, like I've said before, coming all the way up to the spine. You know, those type of things. So it's definitely depending on how chronic it is or the person heard it this weekend, type thing.
And if I have someone, you know, right now is people are training for marathons, half marathons, things like that, I won't completely shut them down. I'll say, hey, why don't we do some cycling? I think it's important to cross train too. You get a lot of runners that just run and then they get these injuries because their bodies aren't used to moving side to side or up and down. It's just moving forward all the time. So getting that person to say, okay, why don't you do some cross training, some swimming, jumping, some dip, yeah, swimming, pool runs are a big one. You know, if you have lower body injuries, just get in the pool and run there instead.
Yeah. We have the ultra anti-gravity treadmill. You ever heard of that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We have that in my office. It's pretty sweet.
That's awesome.
So it's good for, you know, the runner that's got an issue, that's got to get on there and still get their work in, but take some pressure off and some weight off, you know?
Yeah. That way you don't lose too much and then get a new injury when you go out and run that marathon without training.
Exactly.
And you know, if it, for people at home, there's the common things people use. You're doing stretching. The Strasburg sock is a big one that I've seen people use. I like that eccentric. The same thing I would do with the Achilles. You actually can load the weight. I was reading an article a while back on this one exercise versus typical physical therapy for plantar fasciitis, and what they say to do is put a backpack on, put a couple books in there, and then do that eccentric heel raise and drop with one foot, where you're wearing the backpack and you actually will come up onto both feet, onto your toes, and then lower down slowly on one foot. And that exercise tends to really help loosen up the Achilles, but also the plantar fascia.
Yeah. So, one thing I see too is, like, you know, a lot of, you know, you're going to hear stretching is going to be a big thing. And, you know, I've kind of come to the conclusion you got to be careful with that, because sometimes you almost have like a micro tear type situation going on in that plantar. And every time they go to stretch it, they're just reopening. And you're bringing blood there to heal. And you're revamping and you're coagulating blood into that tear and helping things work. And all of a sudden they're pulling that tear back every time. So it's like, you know, you're banging your head against the wall. But, you know, definitely another big thing I always, you know, I give a lot of my patients lacrosse balls. To just roll that foot out real softly, or, you know, whatever they're going to use. But I definitely like lacrosse ball a lot. You know, I've had some great success with myself using it. So. I believe in it, and definitely think that it helps in those sense. And then also foot soaks. I feel that Epsom salt type soaks for the foot. You know, really getting that heat and that moisture rolling into that foot, of getting blood flowing. You know, you can't heal without blood, so, you know, it's one of those things that I feel definitely helps the process move along faster.
Yeah, and then, you know, even thinking of soaking while rolling your foot, you know, that's another one. Just, people don't have to take baths, but they can put their foot in the bathtub and soak in there for 15 minutes and roll their foot on a lacrosse ball or golf ball while they're soaking. I'll usually have them put it right by their bed, so first thing in the morning they roll out the foot, just to get break up that tightness, because plantar fasciitis is always worse first thing in the morning. So
100%,
you want to get ahead of that before you just step right down onto the ground and get that shooting pain in there.
For sure, man. So, you know, dude, I think this was an awesome conversation. I really want to thank you and everything like that. You have any last, you know, thoughts or anything for the audience? You maybe want to address those two seminars, and just maybe let everyone know where, if they have any questions for you, they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, so we have Rich Hazel and I, we teach motor point acupuncture for Chinese medicine that works. I'm often on their site, on Facebook, Chinese medicine that works. I've been on their podcast as well. On Facebook, you can find me at Dan Dominguez. You were telling me there's quite a few of me out there. So usually you can find me on that page as well. And the seminars are going to be June 2nd, a one-day intensive. That's on a Friday, where we're going to be going over orthopedic testing and our top 10 motor points that you can use, you know, on Monday in clinic. And then the third weekend in August, we're going to have a full weekend advanced motor point acupuncture seminar. So we're going to be going over some more advanced stuff than just the basics that we've taught in the past. And this is... there is a prerequisite to it. You have to have some experience in motor points to take that one. So
very cool. So, yeah, it's definitely some great stuff. And, you know, I definitely look forward to having you come on again and, you know, keep this, you know, dialogue going and keep sharing knowledge with everyone, you know?
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome, Dan. I thank you so much. So this was AJ, and I'll catch you on the next one.
This has been the Acupuncturist on Fire podcast with AJ Adamczyk. To continue being inspired, head over to acupuncturistonfire.com and find AJ on Instagram at acupuncturistonfire.